on our way home from the office, usually our commute is a complete crapshoot. So you usually need to find different ways to get home.
Coming from São Paulo, which, you know, for me, when I was growing up, being in traffic for over a couple of hours a day was a normal thing. It's pretty sad, isn't it? I mean, the fact that you get used to traffic and using spending all of that time in the car or in the bus or whatever, just so you can get to your destination is pretty hard.
Traffic horror stories. We all have one, right? Whether your daily commute consists of riding in a packed subway car during peak morning rush hour, or trying to stay calm when traffic is backed up on the highway, traffic is one experience that cannot be easily dodged. A few months ago, I was driving a rented car back from a family weekend in a town called Hakone, a few hours from Tokyo. Hakone is known for its onsens, or natural hot springs, which are the thing in Japan. It was a Sunday evening, and we'd lollygagged, stopping for ice cream, to take pictures of Lake Ashi and Mount Fuji. We were feeling good after our soaks and weren't in a rush, at least for a while. Then traffic went from bad to worse to basically stopped. In case you're wondering, driving to Hakone for the weekend from Tokyo, which, yeah, is the world's largest metro area, it isn't an original idea. We hadn't paid attention to the batteries in our phones, which our kids had been using in the back seat of our little Nissan to distract them from the fact that they were now getting hungry. Ice cream was several hours ago at this point. So we only got about 10 minutes of searching on Google Maps for alternate routes before the phones died. And yeah, we left for a rush on Friday night, forgot to bring the car charger or external battery. Next, we pulled over and futzed with the in-car navigation system, trying to change it from Japanese to English, but we couldn't figure it out. Maybe because we felt the pressure of the clock ticking. By the way, as an American living for a year in Japan without speaking or reading the language, there are lots of these moments. Google lost in translation exercise machine scene for an idea of how I was feeling right about then. Anyway, long story short, we gritted our teeth, followed the blue line on the dashboard screen which we could understand, and ignored the voice instructions in Japanese which we couldn't. We made it, more than an hour late. The guy at the Nissan agency took pity on us and didn't charge us extra. It was past closing time at our favorite neighborhood noodle place, so we grumbled over a late takeout dinner from 7-Eleven, more stressed than when the weekend started. All the relaxation from the weekend onsens, long gone. If you live anywhere near a city, and most of us do, you've probably had a similar experience. I'm guessing most of you measure your commute in minutes and not miles. But things are changing due to autonomous cars and otherwise. I'm finally back in Portland, Oregon after my year in Japan, and the first thing I noticed was all the Lime, Bird, and Skip e-scooters everywhere. Anyway, what's going to happen to traffic when self-driving cars and all these mobility services merge with smart city stuff like traffic management systems? On today's episode, we discuss the future of traffic with another carpool conversation. There's nothing like a good conversation to help you get through the traffic, right?
On our way home from the office, usually our commute is a complete crapshoot. So you usually need to find different ways to get home in the most efficient way. So this may change in the future if we have more intelligent infrastructure on our road, which will help us guiding the fastest and most efficient way.
This is Marcus Welts talking about the unfortunate commute ride he may have to endure after we talk. He's president of Siemens Intelligent Traffic Systems, or ITS. He's based in Austin, Texas.
Coming from São Paulo, which, you know, for me, when I was growing up, being in traffic for over a couple of hours a day was a normal thing. It's pretty sad, isn't it? I mean, the fact that you get used to traffic and spending all of that time in the car or in the bus or whatever, just so you can get to your destination is pretty hard. So whatever it is that we can do to help that, we will, for sure.
The only upside of traffic is it gives people more time to listen to podcasts.
Yeah, definitely.
Along for the ride or discussion for today's episode is Priscilla Boyd. She's also based in Austin and serves as a senior product manager for ITS. Marcus and Priscilla and the rest of the ITS team work on multiple aspects of traffic management technology. Turns out there's a lot you can do at intersections and roadsides that goes way beyond timed walk signs for pedestrians and multi-signal traffic lights.
I'm the president and CFO of Siemens Intelligent Traffic Systems in North America. It's actually quite an exciting role because in that position, I oversee all functions, including R&D, manufacturing, product management, project management, sales, and customer service, and also driving the strategic direction of the business in the most largest and one of the most dynamic markets globally. When I really started engaging in ITS, I had a little bit of the challenges, what we talked about earlier, that I just were thinking that there must be a smarter way on how, let's say, you could traverse through a city and that the patterns in the traffic flow can be optimized using, let's say, software-based algorithms. And although this type of technology has probably not been rolled out all across above the globe, but we certainly see a lot of changes in how people travel these days. So it's more an integrated view on mobility, including connectivity to vehicles, but also new modes of shared mobility, such as bike sharing, car sharing, ride hailing, and having all these aspects in a, let's say, combined and integrated system, which really enable door-to-door traffic, is probably a big part of the future, which keeps us busy every day.
My role here at Siemens ITS is all about the product side. So anything relating to the inception of a product or a product idea or maybe a feature within a product, all the way to making sure that we get those products to market, making sure that we are managing them as they progress, and making sure that if we have obsolescence, that we are managing those as well. So I am responsible for our controllers, the hardware and the software, as well as the advanced traffic management systems that we have, and which sometimes people, I guess, take a little bit for granted, because they can obviously see in the streets the traffic lights and the controller cabinets, if you like. But what they might not realize is that we have a lot of systems out there which are actually allowing the cities and the agencies to indeed control how the traffic flowing.
ITS, like the rest of Siemens, is engaged in projects all over the country and the world. One of them is an award-winning project in New York City, where driving isn't for the faint of heart. Remember David Letterman? He said traffic signals in New York are just rough guidelines.
The project in New York is all around the connected vehicle side, the connected mobility side. So we know that connectivity into the car and out of the car is growing. I mean, a lot of us will have mobile apps that we already use, or maybe infotainment systems that already have some sort of connectivity to the external world. And the idea here in the project that we've got kicking off in New York is all about making use of that connectivity, but for intelligent traffic purposes. So, for example, can we augment the data that we get from the car for improving traffic management? Can we improve safety, perhaps? Can we get the information from the vehicles that maybe there is a hazard somewhere, or there is a warning of some sort that could actually help us direct traffic in a way that avoids accidents or maybe just improves driver comfort and things like that? So the New York City is a very exciting project. Going to be huge, and it just builds on all of the other types of connected mobility projects that we've been doing, which is really looking at making use of that connected vehicle data for the future. And you know, it's happening, and we just want to make sure that we use that information to help the cities out there manage the traffic more efficiently.
We certainly will also in the future have all the proven and reliable components on our roads, like lights, signs, signals, detectors and sensors. But with connected vehicle technology, they will become more and more part of an integrated system. And what we are essentially doing is to enable the cars to talk to the infrastructure. So let me talk a little technical here for a moment. So with connected vehicle technologies, the cars will broadcast their position, their direction, the speed, and the latitude and longitude 10 times per second, and the infrastructure is able to respond to that in real time. With that technology, we can predict potential crash trajectories of vehicles or vehicle to other road users, such as pedestrians or cyclists. So in very simple terms, we can predict and prevent accidents from happening. There is obviously also a broader aspect to that, because cars will become traffic data generators and information prosumers, heavily enriching the data available which cities need in order to manage the traffic holistically. And with that, we will see a lot of potential on how we can efficiently steer individual cars from their origin to their destination by avoiding gridlock even in peak traffic times.
We've discussed this idea of car connectivity on this podcast before. Connectivity comes in many flavors, from that ETC card I use to automatically pay for tolls driving around Japan, to full-on internet connectivity for entertainment, navigation, and teleoperation applications. For ITS, vehicle connectivity is about a standard called DSRC.
So DSRC stands for Dynamic Short Range Communications. So the example I typically use is if you imagine like every car or every device will have its own local Wi-Fi, if you like, which essentially it's what it is. It's a private network, low latency, that is dedicated for connected vehicles. So that's using the 5.9 gigahertz band. And the idea there would be for the vehicles to exchange messages between themselves, but also for the vehicles and the infrastructure to exchange messages between themselves. So for example, say you've got a sign, a physical sign that says don't drink and drive, or maybe that gives information about an accident that might have occurred somewhere. Sometimes you might not have those signs everywhere. In fact, you probably wouldn't, because they're pretty expensive to deploy. So typically the cities will choose the most strategic places to deploy those signs. But if you have dynamic short-range communications between the vehicle and the infrastructure, then if you have the system to support it, and that's the kind of system that we do, then you can actually send the message from the system to the cars via these infrastructures. Maybe the operator can then say, okay, there has been an accident in this particular road, and broadcast to all of those vehicles in this area without actually having a physical sign there that people can read. And maybe in the future, when we see more and more levels of autonomy and more cars with the autonomy built in, maybe the cars will actually take that information and they will automatically route themselves so that they can avoid that accident and make it the whole journey more efficient and more pleasant for the passengers in itself.
I think it's fair to say that DSRC benefits from nearly a decade of industry-driven standardization, large-scale real-world testing, and a great track record. This is impossible to ignore, and today it is the only technology which has latency requirements in order to have a broad range of connected vehicle applications in such a real-world scenario. And this is why we're obviously big fans from DSRC. And we want to get this technology rolled out, and this is why we are using that based on the requirements the US DOT has put forward in those large scale projects. And certainly, what we make sure as a designer and manufacturer of infrastructure is that if in the future a new means of communication would outperform DSRC, that we can easily upgrade the infrastructure, and that all investments are still valid for our customers. I think this is an important part of our strategy, and this is what we guarantee to our customers.
So DSRC on sort of current vehicles in Europe and the States and Japan, I assume, has this built in. And is there like an aftermarket solution for older vehicles?
Not off the shelf as far as I know, but I think that there are a lot of companies out there which are starting to develop that, and we are working with some of them. I mean, the truth is DSRC as a standard into the vehicles is going to come anyway, and that's part of the work that we've been doing with the US DOT. But when it comes to off-the-shelf pieces to actually retrofit vehicles, I mean, there is a huge amount of opportunity for people to actually bring products like that to market, because there will be so many vehicles out there that, you know, people don't necessarily buy a car every year or every 2 years, so they might not actually get the DSRC technology built in for a few years still to come. So as far as I know, I think there is no off-the-shelf onboard unit for DSRC today, but I do know that there are companies out there that are developing it right now. So hopefully we're not that far away from actually seeing those. Maybe we'll go to a Best Buy or something and you just buy a DSRC onboard unit.
This talk about various technologies and communication tools to manage and ease traffic in cars got me to thinking. What if you don't have a car? What if you have to take the bus or subway and either don't want or can't afford to own a vehicle or regularly use a car sharing service like Uber or Lyft? Are you going to be subject to clogged or inconvenient public transportation options while those in cars increasingly avoid these hassles? I brought up this point to Marcus and Priscilla. I was just reading a profile in the New Yorker one recent issue about the new head of MTA in New York, and the headline is, can New York subway be saved? There was some hubbub a couple months back when Uber CEO said he wanted to run a bus system for a city. It seems like the relationship between I've heard some of, we had friends here visiting Japan, he was an academic at Portland State University, and he said public transportation is in a moment of existential crisis. I don't know if it's that, may be overstating it, but in general, first of all, what's the relationship with generally the working relationship ITS and the governments that you, the government, the city and state federal governments that you work with, and more broadly, what is the place of public transportation as we move to sort of multimodal transportation, a whole bunch of competition from the private sector delivering lots of modes of communication? How does public infrastructure fit into that?
So our role is actually pretty straightforward and pretty simple. So we want to support transit agencies and also cities by enabling them with our technologies in order to increase ridership for their public transit systems and also integrate the traditional modes of public transit, such as buses, trains, light rail, into an integrated system, also considering the new modes of transit, such as ride-hailing, car sharing, and bike sharing. So we want to merge the publicly and privately owned mobility services. And we are focusing around, let's say, the holistic picture from a view of a city or a transit agency. But you could certainly ask, does a public transit builder in the future actually have to love the idea of public transportation? And the answer is maybe not. But there is a reason residents of cities with struggling transit systems, like New York, get mad when they realize that people overseeing those systems don't actually use them. So in many, many cities, not only in New York, but also here in Austin, the people who use public transit are often not choice riders, but they're taking public transit because they don't have any other choice. This applies more and more as if you go into more rural areas where there is no, let's say, door-to-door transportation. And the point is that while mass transit is in many cases painful, it doesn't necessarily have to be like that. And that's, again, the core of our vision, to increase the efficiency of both the car drivers and the transit users by reducing congestion and creating a sustainable and attractive public transit system. I think the key is to focus both on the standard roster of traffic problems like delays, safety, crime, and grime, while at the same time challenging the basic tenets of public transit, like set routes or schedules. So as said, I mean, our technologies enable the integration of these modes of transportation, so that consequently we build a mobility operating system for smart cities. And with mobility as a service, we enable cities to offer true door-to-door mobility in an economically viable and competitive and attractive way. So we are reimagining the way to get people not only from A to B, but from A to C, using intelligent software on the back end.
Are there any cities around the world that stand out that ITS is working with that do an especially good job with an efficient public transportation system, or any other success stories just to mention? And we can include a link to other, you know, things that are written in the show notes for our listeners.
Digital traffic and fleet management, certainly a good example is also Seattle Department of Transport, because this is a city which already uses the state-of-the-art advanced traffic management system. And with that, we have actually been able to reduce the traffic on the worst commute day in an area which includes the Mercer Lane in Seattle, aka the Mercer Mess, from initially 35 minutes to 20 minutes. And this adds up. So if you really reduce travel time for a daily commuter by 10 minutes each day, And you commute to work the average 260 days, it will give you 86 hours back annually. And so there is a big increase, especially on efficiency, also considering that traffic is not is a non-linear problem really here.
So Pri, do you want to talk about London?
Yes, London is an exciting place, and I should have mentioned earlier, you're aware of this, but for those listening, I moved from Siemens ITS in the UK before joining ITS here in the US about 5 months ago now, and Transport for London is one of our biggest customers for ITS, not just in the UK, but globally, and if anything, London itself in the UK is one of the flagship cities out there when it comes to transportation and traffic systems. So we've been doing a lot of work with London, ranging from, you know, the traffic signal control, traffic detection, traffic management, to also the sort of adaptive traffic control algorithms that they have running. So another thing that people often don't realize is when they're driving around, there are sensors built into the road. They may be on the ground, they may be on a pole, they could be a camera, they could be radar, they could be all sorts of different technologies. But typically those sensors exist so that they can enable adaptive control. So all that means is instead of you telling the cars or the traffic lights, okay, stay in the red lights for 15 seconds all the time, it actually adapts based on the volume of traffic. So you want to maximize throughput, you want to reduce the delays, you want to get people flowing as much as possible. So adaptive control is all about that. It's all about making decisions to make sure that everyone gets to flow in a city. So back more than 20 years ago now, we developed an algorithm called Scoot, which is essentially to taking the data that those detectors in the roads collect from the vehicles and pedestrians and so on. Scoot makes the decisions in the system side, in the traffic management system, and then sends that information to the traffic lights so they can coordinate depending on the volume of traffic. So we did that development back more than 2 years ago, as I say, with a bunch of other partners, and together with Transport for London, we've just been awarded a new project which is going to be a 10-year contract to deliver what we think it's going to be the future of traffic management. So as part of that, we're going to be developing the future of this Scoot algorithm as well. And that's really exciting because, I mean, we've got Scoot in many different countries, including here in the US, including places like Seattle. And it's for us, it's really exciting because we're going to start incorporating these new sources of data like connected vehicle data that we talked about a little earlier on the DSRC front, but also other sources that will allow us to help manage the congestion in the cities more efficiently, but not just using the traditional detection sources, but also using these new data points that are coming from devices in the car and so on.
Each of our guests gets a series of rapid-fire questions. You can get from point A to point B on bike, scooter, bus, subway, or car. And we can get to know our guests by switching up the interview format. Here's what Marcus and Priscilla had to say. First question is, what is your go-to source of information regarding what's happening in transportation and mobility services and smart infrastructure today? Who should we be reading or listening to or following on social media or whatever?
Well, I mean, I would point to associations like the Transport Research Board, ITS America, ITE, and those type of organizations who are always on top of the latest innovations. But I think a major part is also just listening to our customers and take a ride with a transit system, which you usually don't do, and you will see the biggest challenges by yourself.
Priscilla, who do you read?
I read ITS International a lot, but like Marcus, I mean, I refer to ITS America. In fact, we joined them as members not that long ago, and they have some really great newsletters that come through very often. So, yeah, I would say ITS International and ITS America are great sources of information in this space.
Second question. Everyone's talking about a very bright utopian transportation future. We're going to have smart vehicles, fully instrumented infrastructure. working together seamlessly. What's the biggest stumbling block that you see, either technical or social, standing in the way of this transportation future that that we keep reading about?
I would say it's probably not so much really a technical hurdle. In some cases, it's as simple as an antiquated procurement process of public agencies, which is not necessarily supporting innovations or new business models.
I think for me it would be the actually public acceptance, trust. It's going to take a while for people to get used to the concept of handing control to a machine. So I think that until people are used to that, you know, that's going to be a blocker for the deployment of autonomous vehicles in larger scales. But I'm sure it's going to come, you know, like other things that we see out there. If it wasn't for someone having an idea on the cars, we probably would still be riding horses right now. So we've got to be, you know, people will come around to it. So there'll be some early adopters, but I think it's all about public acceptance.
Third question. It seems like the hottest field around these days, both autonomous vehicles and intelligent traffic systems. What advice do you have for somebody who might be wanting to get into the field, either a college student today or somebody who's a career changer? How do you get started working in intelligent traffic systems? What kind of background do you need?
Well, I mean, I think traditionally we have been focusing a lot on, let's say, traffic engineering competencies. But these days, there is a stronger shift into really data scientists, data analytics, because a lot of the applications are really around, let's say, operational, data-driven operations and applications, which make a big difference. Maybe one word also, that there are certainly disruptive changes on both sides of the aisle, automotive and infrastructure. The magic is probably happening in between those traditionally separated worlds, and instead pointing to old lines or drawing new lines in the sand, let's leverage those synergies. The next generation American road trip will certainly look much different than today.
Yeah, I would agree. And just to add a little bit, by the way, we've obviously got lots of job openings, and if anyone is interested in joining us, go and look at our website, the career section, and obviously we've got offices all over the world, especially when it comes to the mobility part of Siemens. So yeah, definitely worth a look in there. There are lots of different and exciting positions that would be great to have people, you know, taking a look. And for sure, if they have an engineering background, that would help. But that doesn't mean that's all that we require. If, you know, skills are transferable at the end of the day.
No, well, you guys can't have them in ITS because we want them in PLM, but that's another conversation.
Yes, so if you're looking for careers online, look for ITS specifically, not PLM. No, I'm joking. PLM is great too.
Last question, what's the best part of your job today? It seems like you guys have fascinating jobs and in an interesting space. What do you like most about what you do?
I think it's maybe sounds a bit staged, but I think it's at the end of the day really the people. It has really been amazing to me to watch how much brain power, how much money, how much serious thought has been poured into the transportation in the last years. So we need our best and our brightest to start entertaining this issue. I believe we are the best if we are confronted with big things, and this is a big one, and it won't wait. So let's get started.
Yeah, for me, it's got to be the actually working on something that impacts people, you know, getting out of the office and coming across things that are related to our industry, to the things that we do every day, and making an impact and helping people getting from A to B. I think for me, that's very exciting and certainly helps, you know, keeping me motivated with whatever I'm doing. So I'd say having an impact on everyday lives of people out there. For sure, with our products.
Great. Well, a big thanks again to both of you. Just lastly, since the podcast medium, the audio format is kind of a personal one, just listeners get a flavor of who you are sort of outside of your role as an executive and a senior technologist product manager. What do you two do for fun outside of your work?
Well, since, I mean, in our day-to-day job, we are dealing with a lot of challenges on the road. I try to go off the road in my let's say free time. So whether this is hiking in the mountains, I'm a big enthusiast on skiing. Although this is not that easy in living in Austin, Texas, but certainly whenever I get the chance to get in a slope, whether this is in Colorado or in somewhere in Austria, this is what I really love. And to reflect a bit on, let's say, how things are if you're not in your day-to-day work mode and thinking about traffic.
Yeah, for me, it's got to be music. I love music. I love listening to it, playing music. I play the drums and the guitar, and probably Lego. I am an adult fan of Lego, ADOL, adult, Adolf even. So yeah, I love anything to do with building sets and creating sets and you name it, anything except going to Legoland because it's a little bit too much geared towards children. But Lego, the Lego house in Billund is very good. I would recommend that if you haven't been.
Well, you'll have to include it. Send a photo of something you've built with Legos and we'll put it on the show page.
All right.
Along with your TEDx talk at Oxford, of course.
Yeah, all right. I still haven't watched that. I honestly cannot watch the whole thing. I just look at it and say, no. I remember this too well. I'm just going to leave it on.
You should. It's a good one.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. No. Definitely not.
Well, 20,000 people say you're wrong who've watched it on YouTube, so you did a great job.
Thank you.
A big thanks today to Marcus Welts and Priscilla Boyd of Siemens ITS for their time in the interview. We have more good conversations coming up. Next time, Ed Bernardin is back. Ed was the guest on the inaugural episode of this podcast, and in the next episode, he swaps roles and acts as host, interviewing Gernot Spiegelberg, Vice President and Department Head of E-Mobility Concepts for Siemens AG. Dr. Spiegelberg is also a senior fellow at the Technical University of Munich, and is definitely one of the big brains here working on this stuff. And thanks to you for joining us today. We're getting close to the end of this first batch of episodes and are thinking about what we want to do moving forward, how we want the show to evolve or change. Let us know by leaving us a review, or better yet, send me an email or voice memo. And let me know if it's okay to use what you send in a future podcast, as we hope to eventually incorporate listener questions in the show. My email is jeff_cook@mentor.com. That's jeff_KOCH. I'll put it in the show notes too. I promise I'll respond to each and every one, maybe not right away, but I will. And as always, for more, visit Siemens PLM Software online. Siemens PLM Software is a world-leading provider of product lifecycle management and manufacturing operations management software. We help thousands of companies realize innovation by optimizing their processes from planning and development through manufacturing, production, and support.